Hey everyone, it's Harmon. We have a very special part two of a three-part episode on the history of Dolomite. Now you might know there's a new Netflix movie coming out starring Eddie Murphy playing Rudy Ray Moore, who created the character Dolomite. So time to learn a little more about him. Before we jump into the episode, quick plugs. This Thursday, October 17th, 8 p.m. at the Red Room in New York City, I'll be doing my monthly show, Tale. So come down for that. Also, take time to subscribe, like, comment on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you get Comedy History 101. It kind of helps us out. Why wouldn't you want to help us out? And without further ado,
you're stupid. Everybody's so stupid.
Good thing about doing comedy in Russia, you have captured the audience.
You're stupid. Everybody's so stupid.
Comedy History 101.
I'm waiting for Dolomite.
For who?
Dolomite. And tell him I want him out of here in 24 hours. And 23 of them are already gone.
All right. Oh, we get it. Yeah. You know, we've seen it. Yeah, yes, yeah.
We've lived it, dude.
So what you heard there, once again, is a audio track from the trailer of the classic movie Dolomite, which we talked about Dolomite, yeah. Which we talked about last week here on
Comedy History 101,
where we school you in comedy. I, of course, am Harmon Leon, and with me, of course, is one rat soup eating insecure honky motherfucker, Scott Kalonico.
Hey, Harmon, my name is Scott. I live in Europe, which is where the Dolomites are at.
The Dolomites, yes.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's weird. It's funny that he calls himself Dolomite, but Dolomites. You've been there. You biked there.
I did bike in the Dolomites, yeah. But as we talked about last episode, which was part one on the history of Dolomite, Rudy Ray Moore, the comedian who popularized the character Dolomite, actually didn't come up with the Dolomite character. It was as they called back in the day, a wino named Rico who would tell stories of this fictional gangster Dolomite. At where Rudy Ray Moore worked, which was Dolphin Records, located in Los Angeles, California.
And he was probably, Rico was probably living on actual, because they actually really have a real Skid Row, like a Skid Row in Los Angeles.
They do. They have them in every city. New York, it used to be the Bowery.
The Bowery,
in San Francisco, it used to be South of Market.
Tenderloin.
So, no, but it actually used to be kind of where they have the Euro Bueno Center used to be the old Skid Row of San Francisco.
Right.
Just as a little trivia and a digression. But we digress because Rico brought the character of Dolomite to Rudy Ray Moore, who was a stand-up comedian of the time and decided to bring that character on stage, recorded his first album. This is all just a recap, dude.
Right,
They do in the sequels.
That's fine.
Brought the character on stage and decided to record an album in 1970. Eat out more often. He recorded the album for $300. How did that album do, Scott?
Oh, Harmon, it did fantastic. It did so well that people were clamoring for the Dolomite character.
His uncle broke in on Dolomite. Now Dolomite wasn't no more than 3 or 4 when his uncle come breaking through the door. His aunt said, Dolomite, said, I want you to straighten up and treat your brother right. Because if you keep on with your dirty mistreating, I'm going to whoop your ass till your heart stops beating.
And here's the thing, dude. So I actually listened to the first 10 minutes or so of the Eat Out More Often album about Dolomite. And interesting trivia note. Are you ready for this? Are you sitting down?
I think I am, yes.
Okay. Dolomite is from San Antonio. So Dolomite is a Texan.
No, he was born in Arkansas and then moved to Cleveland and then began his career in sort of Milwaukee as a tap dancer. That's,
you're talking about Rudy Ray Moore. I'm talking about Dolomite.
Oh, yes. You're talking, really?
Yeah.
How did you pick that up?
In the album, he actually says that Dolomite is from San Antone, which to non-Texans, that translates as San Antonio.
Oh, that's kind of interesting.
Yeah,
I do a little digging.
I do a little digging here.
What else did you learn about Dolomite, being that this is the episode that this is about?
Well, we'll go through. I guess we're going to be talking about the movie later on, but it is funny that both you and I kind of heard this in a couple of videos, and I noticed it, is that the actual Eat Out More Often album does make a guest appearance in the movie itself.
Oh, no. It was, we'll talk about it later. It was actually Dolomite for President.
Oh, sorry. That's right. Yeah. But the whole movie is very meta in that in the movie they're talking about Dolomite as a person.
Well, that's what they do in fictional movies. They think the fictional person is who... In this case, the protagonist is a person who's real in that reality.
They specifically mentioned that Dolomite has done some albums, so that's not really out of place a Dolomite album would be. Yeah, that was the weird thing, yeah.
Yeah, so again, we're just bringing you guys all up to speed from last episode. So that album, Eat Out More Often, did crazy well. That 3 months later, Rudy Ray Moore released his album, This Pussy Belongs to Me.
Oh, dear.
And in 1970, both these albums reached the top 25 on the Billboard 200, which is crazy for, a comedy album.
Yeah, coming out of nowhere. And self-produced comedy album on top of that.
So was that it? Was that it for Rudy Ray? And also, produced in his basement with a microphone.
With his engineer, like you said, he paid $300 for to come over and make it sound good.
Yeah, and once again, the character of Dolomite, as we forgot to mention up front, is going to be a new Netflix movie starring Eddie Murphy as Rudy Ray Moore, which that movie drops on October 25th. And first of all, thank you, Netflix. Thank you for sending us a screener copy.
Thank you, Netflix.
So we can talk about it on this episode. Ready for a Mike Myers catchphrase?
Yeah.
Not!
Oh, right. No, what?
No, they didn't send me a screener.
Did they say no?
They just didn't respond to my email.
Well, not yet, dude. Give me a couple days.
But anywho, so those albums, he would put out an album every 3 to 4 months of Dolomite. And just to sum up the character of Dolomite once again, as it was described, the ultimate ghetto hero.
He is.
Bad dude, profane, skilled at kung fu, dressed to kill, and hell-bent on protecting the community from evil menaces.
Yes.
He was a pimp with kung fu fighting clique of prostitutes, and he was known for his sexual prowess, Dolomite. So, Scott, those albums did pretty well.
Right.
So Rudy Ray Moore, the next natural progression in his career, he decided he wanted to make a movie out of Dolomite.
Of course,
what happened there?
Well, he went out and he hired probably one of the most famous Sons of
Pizza. Oh, so the studios just went, go ahead, Rudy Ray Moore, make your movie.
No.
Make your movie, Rudy Ray Moore.
No, sorry.
That's
good.
Great. There you
good.
Go.
No, no,
your character's family friendly. Go make your movie.
Okay, no, good.
Or
good.
Was there any obstacles?
No, good setup, Harmon. No, he shopped it around, and they just said all the studios were like, no, with the big hands pushing towards the camera saying no. They're just like, this is dumb. Nobody's going to pay to watch this. This is like the biggest waste of time. We're not going to spend any money on this at all.
Yeah, well, I think it was a lot to do with, like, the language was pretty shocking. A lot of uses of the MF word. So much like how he produced his album, which was Scott, did he use a punk rock aesthetic, as you would say?
No, I would say yes. I was even going beyond punk rock. I would say the punk rockers would say it's a DIY, do it yourself, man.
So he DIY'd his albums, right, which he made that his first album $300, and then that made the Billboard, you know, top 200.
Right.
He did. So what he decided was he would do the same with the Dolomite movie.
Right. And why
so just
not?
A spoiler alert, his budget was $100,000, which he got from his comedy albums and touring on the road. And in the end, it made $12 million. Am I jumping ahead too far?
That's fine, dude. It's good. We'll set up the movie, and then we talk about it.
So the movie, did production just go easy? It's like, oh my God, production's so easy.
No, there were some problems.
No obstacles.
No. There were
when the filming started, which began in 1974.
There were some problems, dude. So first of all, the film was directed by Derville Martin, who probably most people, you might have seen him. He's kind of a bit player in different movies. He was, guess who's coming to dinner? He was the elevator operator in Rosemary's Baby. But mostly he's consigned to the Hollywood history bin because he was the original Lionel Jefferson from the unaired pilot of All in the Family. So,
which is really ironic because I was just at the Smithsonian where I saw the All in the Family chairs.
And even more ironic is our friend Andy, who we saw when we taped Judge Joe Brad way back whenever that was, Judge Joe Brown. Yeah, he got nominated for an Emmy when they redid the Jeffersons. They did like a live TV broadcast.
Like, oh wow! Last, okay, yeah. Cool. Yeah, yeah. Wasn't Woody Harrelson in that?
Yeah, no, yeah,
that
exactly. Was all, yeah, yeah. He was playing Archie. Yeah, yeah. So I think Andy did the Jeffersons part. There was like they did one show that was All in the Family, and the one that was the Jeffersons. Andy did the Jeffersons, I think, which is funny, even more funny because he used to do Lionel Jefferson back in the day when he was in college. But beyond that, okay. So back to the original Lionel Derville Martin. Here's the funny thing: is that Harmon. Mm-hmm. Derville Martin, when he was directing on set, he would enjoy a tasty cold beverage or two that I work with a lot of Ukrainians, and they would call it a vodka. So he would have a few vodkas on set where he would show up on set with a flask, and sometimes he would just kind of disappear when he was filming Dolomite.
Yeah, but I heard, so that was the deal. So first they wanted him as an actor because he was kind of a known actor. But to entice him and to get him as an actor, Rudy Ray Moore offered him also to be the director.
Right, yeah.
And Derville Martin always hated the movie. He hated it in production, and he hated it when it was first screened.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he was like the guy that kind of knew the Hollywood stuff, in addition to the director of photography, which was Nick Joseph von Sternberg, who was actually kind of
Joseph von Sternberg's son,
kind of the star, the son of Hollywood royalty.
Yeah, but he was just a student at UCLA at the time,
right,
so he
exactly.
was just, you know, if you're a film student, and again, these would be the type of movies you would be working on.
Yeah,
in
but
film
he,
school.
But he's,
and he's actually getting paid at the same time,
right?
So you know, you could see it was actually his first movie as a DP.
To play,
and he was production manager,
right,
as well.
Right, but to play, like, if I could reference another Rudy Ray Moore movie, to play Petey Wheatstraw, the devil's son-in-law, otherwise devil's
advocate.
Oh, you're
advocate.
Jumping
so many.
No, no.
Wait, spoiler alert.
No, I'm just saying. Nope. I'm just saying to play.
You mean which co-starred Skillet and Leroy?
Yeah, I'm saying to play devil's advocate as endorsed by Petey. He wasn't just a normal USC student. He was the son of a pretty fucking famous director who he also happened to be a USC student at the time. So yeah, they got.
Oh, was USC not UCLA? Big rivalry.
Yeah,
it was USC.
Yeah, dude. Yeah, horrible.
So again, all the studios turned it down. The big response from the studios was no one would ever watch this movie. Another obstacle was Rudy Ray Moore was, you know, he's supposed to play like the most badass pimp in the history of pimpdom, but in real life he was kind of small and pudgy.
Yeah, he was.
And he could. We both, you know, within the last 24 hours, have watched the original Dolomite, and he is pretty pudgy.
He's a little, but he's not, he's stocky, I think would be a better word.
Yeah, he also was in the military, so he's kind of built. But I think he was probably about like 48 or so.
He was older. Yeah, he was way older when he did this, which was the other crazy cool thing, you know, about it. He's just like, I'm just going to do it, you know?
Yeah, so at the time, he was living in the Dunbar Hotel in Los Angeles, which was it was condemned in 1974, and that's when filming began. And he lived there. He got to live there for free, and he took up the entire bottom floor of the hotel because they had him live there for free to prevent people from squatting at the Dunbar. Yeah. So that became the main location of Dolomite. Alleys around the Dunbar Hotel.
Yeah, and then they do have a prison at the beginning. I mean, that was the very first shot of Dolomite in the prison cell. It's like that is an actual prison, so you gotta like give them props for that.
Yeah, so the Dunbar was a bit run down. There was a lot of holes in the wall. So to cover up the holes, they put a lot of mirrors and velvet paintings over the holes, which, again, it presented a logistical nightmare because if you have mirrors, you're going to see cameras. And Scott, we just both recently watched Dolomite. What do you see a lot in shots that's almost becomes like a character in the movie?
It is. Well, I've made a note. So like the first, because it was weird because it's, Harmon, I get a little technical here, and I'm not going to be correctly technical about all the stuff. And some of the stuff when you film these things and you can see the boom, it's okay because it doesn't matter because when they're going to transfer the film later, that part's going to get cut out. But in the case of Dolomite, they filmed it at a different ratio or they used a different ratio that was going to wind up, you know, in the film. So basically what happened is the parts of the boom that they thought were going to get cut out weren't cut out. So the boom does make a lot of appearances. I actually made a note of it. So the first appearance of the boom is at it's in it's about I thought I had it on here.
Was it when they were at Dolomite's Club, the Total Experience?
No, it was way before that. It was when the Dolomites telling the story outside to the hamburger pimp.
And but you can, there was you can, a yeah, there's a hell of a lot of boom.
Oh no, here it is. I found it here. So yeah, so I think it's about the movie I was watching had about a 7 minute long intro. So that means so it's about 15 minutes in. You'll see. Dolomite. There's a name drop. There's a name drop reference. Dolomite drops a name drop to his shoes, Hush Puppies, and it's the first time you see the boom. So it's about 15 minutes in.
Dolomite is my name, and f***ing up motherfuckers is my game.
So that would be the fault of son of Hollywood royalty Nick Von Stromberg.
Exactly.
In his first DP role?
Yes, exactly.
Learned nothing from his dad.
But he did follow up. He did work on
On the rest of the Dolomite.
Yeah, he worked on Human Tornado as well. So, you know, he must have liked
it. Yeah, I think Tourist Trap or something like that, a big Hollywood movie down the road.
All right.
But there, again, that was the part of thing that plagued it was a lot of boom mics, kind of shots of the crew in the frame.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You get actors looking right at the camera.
A lot of bad. So the first thing I noticed. So here's the first thing I know. If we could start going, are we gonna start talking about the movie? If we could do that.
Yeah, I think that's what we are. Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. So the first thing you see is like this is the first thing. Because I always think it's a great first line. Because the first line that you hear out of Dolomite is, some jailer says, "Hey, Dolomite, the warden wants to see you." And the first line you hear out of Dolomite is, "What is that rat soup eating motherfucker want?" Which I think is a great first line. But then when the warden calls him into the office, and then there's this kind of flashback, but they don't really signal it in any way. So all of a sudden,
the flashback is like, what is
but
that?
The weird thing is, it kind of just
looks off to the right or something.
Yeah, yeah. But the weird thing is, right after that, then they have another flashback, and they do the whole when Queen Bee talks about it, then they have all the effects and stuff. But the very first flashback, nothing happened. It just all of a sudden, you're like, where the fuck are we now?
It's like we've seen this in like sort of Ed Wood movies and The Room. You know, again, they're working under, they're just probably like just shoot and run, you know, one take for everything. Not really great at continuity.
No, well, I mean, that's the thing is it's like...
And no audio fades. No. And again, it's like if they were on Premiere, just slap a little audio transition there to fade out the music.
But the weird part in that first scene is they do, when Queen Bee has her flashback, in the same scene, they do the fade out, like, ooh, you know, they do the out of focus thing, but then they don't do it. Dolomite tells his story, which is like it's a little like, where the fuck are we now, you know?
Yeah, again, I think that just had to do with budget constraints, because again, the budget was at $100,000. They ran out of that money, so what Rudy Ray Moore did was he went back on the road doing comedy to raise enough money to do post production.
Yeah, and I think that's the other thing that we mentioned, I think mentioned in the last episode, but like when they ran this by the censors, you know, they gave it an R, but because they weren't quite sure, like, because a lot of the slang was lost on them, and a lot of it was lost on me, like I couldn't tell what people were saying.
Yeah.
So they had to make a lot of cuts, mostly because of the visual stuff, like sexual stuff and just like other like violence and stuff. They would just like have to.
And spoiler alert. There's also the where Dolomite rips the guts out of Willie Green.
Yes,
with his hand.
Yes.
and there's just a jump cut, and they had to cut it out. So what they did was just cut it out.
And that was
without a jump cut.
And that was
and even an audio jump cut.
And that was at the end, I think. I mean, I don't was that the hospital scene?
Yeah.
Was it?
No, it was before the hospital scene.
Oh, so it was in the club.
It was in the Total Experience.
Right, the Total Experience. But like it's so weird. There was no big build up to it. All it was just like, yeah, it's Willie Green, then he's dead. The interesting thing is that on the Dolomite album, like Willie Green's mentioned on the Dolomite album, on the Eat Out More Often.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah. As the character.
Yeah. So he's creating the DCU, the Dolomite Character Universe. Dude.
Some folks say that Willie Green was the baddest motherfucker the world ever seen. But I want you to hold on to your seats. Hold on to them tight. Because you now get ready to see the story of me. Yes, me, the badass Dolomite.
Like
yeah, because on the album, he's telling the tale of Dolomite with Willie Green.
Yeah, exactly.
But speaking of which, do you know who did the music to it?
No.
I forgot the composer, but what they wanted was a theme song, and Shaft was big at the time.
Yeah, Shaft.
So they just wanted a theme song. Yeah, so a theme song just talking about how bad Dolomite was. So that was the impetus for the Dolomite theme song, which talks about how bad Dolomite was.
Oh, he's bad. The man is out of sight. He's a tough son of a gun, y'all. The man's name is Dolomite. Hey.
Yeah, I guess the credits are pretty well done. You know, up until you actually start getting into the movie, do you start seeing the not goodness of it.
I would say the music is pretty high water mark. Yeah. Like the band that's in there is pretty cool.
Well, there's a whole dance scene at the no, that's not the experience. Where does that dance? They go to another.
They're at the Total Experience.
Yeah, no, they go to the other club. The Total Experience is kind of closed, right? And then they go to the other club where they have like the dance numbers and stuff. Remember, the Dolomite comes out and does the scene.
Yep.
Yeah.
I just saw it mere hours ago.
I know, but I remember that club. But here's the other thing I think our audience might want to know about Dolomite, the other trivia bit. Harmon, do you happen to know what fabric doesn't Dolomite like?
I don't. What?
Really? Yeah, because remember when he gets out of prison and all the girls are handing him clothes and stuff?
Yeah, I know he's like changing his clothes right in the prison.
But he specifically mentioned he doesn't like one type of material.
Why don't you tell us?
Oh, okay. Well, there's a little build up there.
Yeah.
So for those keeping track at home, Dolomite doesn't like cotton.
Oh, I was gonna say cotton. Okay.
Really? Yeah. Who doesn't like cotton though, dude? It's comfortable.
Well, Dolomite does.
Okay. He doesn't.
Yeah. So just again, to end our thing about the music, I think the best theme song was the theme, or best music was the theme to the Hamburger Pimp.
Yeah,
the creeper. He had a good sting to him. So the Hamburger Pimp, who's in the movie. Rudy Ray Moore got a real life junkie to play a junkie in the movie.
Yeah, man, I thought that was really interesting. I actually made a note about that part because they actually have, when they go back to the hotel, which is the, what was it, Dunbar. The Dunbar Hotel. And you can tell, you totally tell that's the Dunbar Hotel. They actually have that scene where he shoots up and they kind of do a little close up of it. It's like a train spotting, you know, kind of shooting up close up.
Yeah, I didn't. He turned his back when he was shooting.
No, there's an actual. There's that, but then there's an actual for real close up. They don't show the needle going in, but like it was. Like,
oh right, yeah.
But the interesting thing about that, okay, and this is before we get to that, when Rudy Ray Moore, it's kind of like right before the pimp shows up when Dolomite mm-hmm. Dolomite does his first kind of poem in the parking lot. You remember that part?
Yep.
Yeah, and so he's telling a poem about the Titanic.
Yeah.
So just one thing I noticed here is that it's like the first line of the poem is like, it was that day in May when the Titanic sailed. And actually the Titanic sailed in April. So I just wanted to point out.
Oh, my God. That's like a verbal jump, boom mic in the shot.
Just wanted to point that out. Yeah, that was off by about a month there, Dolomite. But I do, the other thing I do enjoy mm-hmm. is when they have the credits, that they don't say Rudy Ray Moore, they just say R.R. Moore. I think it's very professional.
Yeah, there you go. But here's a few more other trivia things within the production of Dolomite. So the script was written by one Jerry Jones. Did you check out his other writing credits?
No, that's not the guy who did the Cowboys.
So Jerry Jones wrote the script. And he's had a long kind of acting career. I guess he was on an episode of MASH, and his other writing cred was the other Dolomite movie. He played the role of FBI agent Blakely.
Okay, good.
In the movie. Yep. But in real life, he ran an acting school, and a lot of the characters in the extras that were brought in were actually students in his acting school.
Ah, okay, good, nice. Kind of like Quentin Tarantino and Sheriff Roscoe P. Coltrane.
Yeah, what was the thing with that?
That was, you remember, did you ever watch Dukes of Hazzard? Sheriff Roscoe P. Coltrane? I can't remember the actor's name.
Right, so Tarantino brought him?
No, the other way around. He was he ran an actor's school, and Tarantino was studying acting there, and that's where he met bunch of people that were in Reservoir Dogs. Yeah.
Very cool.
I'll look that up. I can't remember that guy's name.
Yeah, so another thing was a big movie at the time was Enter the Dragon, which spun off a blaxploitation movie, Black Belt Jones, in 1974. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So Rudy Ray Moore brought in a Howard Jackson, who was part of the Chuck Norris Kung Fu schools.
Yes.
So he was the guy who trained Rudy Ray Moore, because you'll see a lot of Kung Fu in the movie, and especially from pudgy Rudy Ray Moore.
Hey.
And that's so Rudy Ray Moore trained with Howard Jones for a few months, and a lot of the Kung Fu fight scenes were actually students of Howard Jackson at his Chuck Norris endorsed Kung Fu school.
Awesome, dude. There you go.
And so, again, we were talking about technical mishaps that happened on production. They had no permits ever.
Okay, yeah. How'd that work out for them?
Well, they had no electricity at the Dunbar, so what they did was they hooked into a transformer, which ended up knocking out all the electricity for the entire city block.
All right.
The crew were paid roughly around $200 a week. The actors were paid around $50 a week. But again, this is 1974 money, so that might not be too bad.
Let me.
It's probably pretty bad.
Well, let me give you a little. So to go back to the movie, Harmon, like I wanted to mention, on one scene in the movie, do you remember the scene where the hooker? This is what, kind of where they introduce the idea of hooker karate girls, where one of Dolomite's hookers are. Mm-hmm. Excuse me. One of Dolomite's sex workers, somebody tries to steal money from her, right? And she's right. and the gentleman says, "Oh, you think you're this $100 hooker, but you're only a $2 hooker." And so he was he's paying $100 for her. And I did the math on this. So $100 in 1975 was $500 in 2009 is $5,500 in 2019.
Yeah. And how much was $2?
I don't know. Yeah, extra polite. Yeah. So, but yeah, $500 for a night with the one of Dolomite's girls. That's no small. Even now, that's no small change, from what I hear.
I don't know. What are you usually?
I don't know. That's what I'm saying. I don't know. That's what I hear.
That's a friend of yours.
Word on the street, dude.
So the movie premiered in theaters in L.A. to mixed reviews. And we say mixed, very mixed. Critics sort of hated it, but audiences loved it.
Yeah, I mean, I could see this being a big. This is still in the era of the drive-in movies or the two-for-one movie. I can see this being, a favorite. You'd bring people to it.
One reviewer said Dolomite is not fit for a blind dog to see. He said the movie is crude and rude, and that actually helped bring in audiences.
Awesome, yeah. Uh-huh. Well, I mean,
he rented out the theater in L.A. when it premiered, correct?
Yeah, I mean, there's a name for that. They call it four-walling. Like when you're trying to distribute a movie yourself, and you go into a town and you rent all the theaters you can, you show the movie. It's just that's four.
And this is pretty ingenious. So he would go on the road doing stand-up comedy. And so he would do like comedy early in the week. And then he would rent out a theater in that town. And all his week of doing comedy, he would promote the screening of the movie. And then when it came time, for the movie to show, like, let's say he's like playing in Cleveland. And then he would play a club there. And then he would rent out a theater and have the screening at the end of the week after his club appearance, and then he would pack out the theater, and when people would turn up, I don't know if he would come out as a Dolomite character and greet people in line, but he'd greet them as Rudy Ray Moore, and he would just like really kind of work the line that, when people would turn up to see it.
Yeah, I mean, that would be awesome. Back in the day, you go and see a little live comedy, and then you could see a movie with Rudy Ray Moore like kicking some ass, man,
Yeah, but it went hand in hand. Like, his stand-up was really, in a way, he'd make some money, but he'd also be, or maybe that money would just go to rent out the theater.
Yeah, and
it worked out really well because he rented out a theater in Chicago. It was called the Woods Theater in Chicago, and on one day, it sold 5,667 tickets for Dolomite.
Right.
And it broke the previous record at that theater of Roger Moore and Live and Let Die.
Yeah, see, I mean, it's not bad. And the other interesting thing is when I was going through the movie watching it, they do kind of make references to like what was going on with Nixon and the whole Watergate stuff. So that was like
Have the evil, corrupt mayor in there.
Yeah, exactly.
Was that the mayor? Yeah. And he's like, I'm not a crook.
The mayor, the priest, the corrupt priest who's keeping the guns, in his sermon, he says like, these white people, they've have all the advantages ever, and they still have to steal, and we're in the ghetto, and if we try to do the same thing, we go to jail.
Very, very relevant of the
some
time.
Good stuff,
So they first went to American International Pictures to see if they would distribute the movie. Their other movies were Black Mama, White Mama.
Roger Corman, dude.
Yep. So so that was like a big Roger Corman distributor.
Yeah, I think he owned it or something like that.
Yeah, but they ended up turning down, and they ended up getting distributed by Dimension Pictures.
Okay. Which later on, which would later on become would be the Scream people.
Oh yeah, Scream was Dimension Pictures.
Yeah, they were like around for a while. Yeah, they were around for a while.
So, like I said, they sold, you know, at Wood Theater, you know, 5,000 plus tickets. And at the time, another, like a mainstream Hollywood movie made for $7 million to appeal to the same audience, Mandingo, was made for $7 million, and they made way more money than Mandingo.
Yeah. So, you think, I mean, it picked up because you could see. So, what was the follow up to Dolomite? Or if we're moving on, was that was Human Tornado.
Yeah. So, that's just, is that basically just Dolomite 2? Or was it the Monkey Hustle?
No, it is. No, dude. Monkey Hustle is another thing. But, yeah, no. Human Tornado is Dolomite 2 because it actually starts with Dolomite, like coming off tour, is where it is. So, it's definitely Dolomite.
All right, and Nick Von Stromberg.
Yeah, he worked on it again. Yeah. So there's that. But you know, we're talking about Dolomite. But what did you think? So I kind of made you go in for the long haul, Harmon. So what did you think about what you think about watching all of Dolomite?
Again, it's like you know, are you looking at it like it's The Room, where it's just like, oh my god, it's bad acting and all that? Or are you looking at it just like Ed Wood, where it's kind of delusional? Or are you looking at it like they have no money and it's probably just hit and run cinema? And again, you know, it's sort of in the lines of a student film, you know, as far as just kind of, you know, get what we can for this amount of money. You know, I'm sure they would love to have... you know, had sets and taken their time, you know, with and hired, you know, real actors. But, you know, they made it with what they can. So I don't think you could say it's like a The Room or an Ed Wood.
No, but did Rudy Ray Moore like the end product? Was he happy with it?
Oh, Rudy Ray Moore liked it. DeVille Martin didn't like it.
Trunky McTrunkstein, yeah.
Yeah, so... Oh, actually, I think... Rudy Ray Moore said it made him cringe a bit when he watched it, right. And you could see the boom mics and technical flaws.
Yeah, that would make anybody cringe. You know, there's nothing you can do about that. But other than that, I mean, it's if you look at it for what it was, and also just kind of cool going out of the system and not going through what Hollywood had to go through, because at the time they were still trying to do their Hollywood indie thing. You know, where they would do like car. What year did Car Wash come out? Was it the same year? No, Car Wash was 76, I think. 76. Yeah, so Car Wash was like the year after this.
Mm-hmm.
And that was kind of like putting black people for, you know, giving them their own kind of community and whatnot, and this is like a movie about this community of this car wash and that in Dolomite, but that was like a mainstream Hollywood movie. Yeah.
Well, I don't know if you compare, but I think one is probably on the shoulders of others because this movie went on to make, you know, $15 million in 1975 money when it was released on April 26, 1975.
Yeah, which is pretty good, and then probably most of that money went to, you know, Mr. Moore, because he kind of financed it and set it up or did whatever. He was the guy who shepherded it through.
Ah, but I don't know if it's like completely sad news or he died penniless, but he didn't get the full rights from Dimension Pictures. They retained like the rights to the movie.
Right, yeah.
So he somehow lost the rights to Dolomite.
Mm-hmm. And then, but then I think he got it in the end from what I was reading. But there was like, yeah, it was caught up in other places for a while.
Yeah, and another thing was when it was released on VHS, it was released in full frame mode. So, you know, instead of like the cropping, what you were saying of boom mics and crew members and shots, that was enhanced even more.
Yeah,
there's VHS.
Yeah, you can see them even more. Yeah. So I don't know what I'm curious to see what format they filmed it on. They must have filmed it in. I guess they filmed it in 35. I don't know. That would be in a whole nother. That's a whole nother podcast, Armin. Going to the technical features of Dolomite.
Yeah, so I think maybe that does it for this part of the history of Dolomite and Rudy Ray Moore, because we're going to be back next week when we finally get a copy from the PR people from Netflix or the production company of Dolomite Is My Name, and we're going to watch the biopic and just compare it to what we've all know right now from our past two episodes on the history of Dolomite and share our knowledge. Any other takeaways from, as a filmmaker, Scott, any other takeaways from the production of Dolomite?
Yeah, I mean, I just want to touch up on my Roscoe P. Coltrane reference earlier about Quentin Tarantino. All I know, I'm just reading from the Wikipedia page, that Tarantino attended acting classes at the James Best Theater Company. So I don't know if that is James Best from
Beatles?
Dukes of Hazzard or not, dude. That's Pete Best. So I'm saying that for the record. But
but that's a crazy thing about like LA is like, you know, again, it's like I went to summer school a couple summers in LA, so I lived there, you know, and you would see all the time like all these acting classes, you know, offered by people you've seen on TV. And you know, and some of these actors, you know, you see them as, you know, from the Dukes of Hazzard, but you know, if you backtrack their back catalog, you know, maybe they've had like a lengthy like Broadway career, you know?
Yeah.
And that's just their only TV part. So it's like you dismiss them as, you know, just this, you know, B, C actor, but you know, some of them have like long careers in theater.
I know. I mean, that's kind of the premise of the movie that I wrote and directed, which you produced, called Everything You Want to Know About Sudden Birth, But We're Afraid to Ask. It just kind of like delving into this crazy training film for police about how to give a baby that, like, why is this so weird? Why does this guy talk weird? Why is this film so bad? And then you find out why. I said, oh, okay, that's interesting.
Ah, which brings us to plug away. Hey. Scott, you take the ball from there.
Okay, wait. I have to leave time for my great intro music. Okay.
Yeah, okay. Or reverb effects.
That's all it is, man. It's so sad. Hey, Harmon, thanks. Well, as it's mentioned, so I wrote and directed a film called Everything You Want to Know About Sudden Birth, But We're Afraid to Ask, which Harmon also produced. We're going to be currently touring all around the United States, but you can see everything on my site, scottklonko.com/suddenbirth. I also wanted to mention a couple big dates we have. Number one, we'll be playing at the Doc NYC Festival in New York City on November 7th. Was that it, Harmon?
And they go November 7th at 9:45 at Cinepolis, Chelsea. So if they go there, will they get to meet the co-star of the straight-to-DVD production of Juice?
Yes, they will. So Harmon will be there if you want to go see. Harmon will be there. We'll also be screening at the AFI Los Angeles Festival in L.A. at the Chinese So that's pretty exciting. In November, you can see it. But next you'll be able to see it is at the Hot Springs International Documentary Film Festival, actually next week in Hot Springs, Arkansas, which is actually a very nice town. So just be looking around for us, and that's what will be shown. Also, just last thing I wanted to plug, Harmon. Harmon and I also do another podcast called This is a President, where we do all things with found presidential audio. And we have a YouTube channel, This is a President. Come check it out. Come look to you can hear the podcast on Stitcher, Last.fm, Google Play, everywhere you find your favorite podcast. And we talk about all things presidential, including the Trump tapes, JFK tapes, Nixon, anything else you want to know about impeachment. It's all there.
Hear, hear. And I'll keep my plug short. This Thursday, October 17th, I have my monthly show, Tale, NYC's Best Storytelling, at the Red Room, above the KGB bar, 8 p.m. We have someone who's been a guest on this podcast. Joe Raiola is one of the storytellers, who is the editor of Mad Magazine. 35 years. So come on out to that. I also have a book out called Tribe Spotting, Undercover Culture Stories. Check it out on Amazon.
Leave a review.
And with that, what's that?
Leave a review.
Oh, yeah, leave a review. Yeah. Yeah, in leave a review, subscribe. And with that, oh, by the way, Jerry Jones, to Officer Blakely, FBI agent, he also appeared on The Brady Bunch and The Cosby Show.
Oh, wow. Okay, nice.
Oh, The Bill Cosby Show, which is not The Cosby
Show.
Well,
no, same thing, dude.
And the Odd Couple. And Here's Lucy.
Oh, man. Yeah.
Oh, Tender Mercies with Robert Duvall.
Oh, Robert Duvall. Yes.
Robert Duvall? Oh, and Hill Street Blues.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he's had a long career. Anyways, thanks a lot for tuning in. We'll be back with the final installment of this three-part episode on the history of Dolomite. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You're stupid. Everybody's so stupid.
Good thing about doing comedy in Russia, you have captured audience.
You're stupid. Everybody's so stupid.
Comedy History 101.
Yes, ma'am. I read you loud and clear. Yes, ma'am. This is... Yes, ma'am. This is the president.
Hey everyone, Scott here. You just finished our Comedy History 101 podcast. So you like comedy and history. Then you should try out our other podcast, This is the President. In every episode, I dig up some found audio from one of our presidents and play it for Harmon, who's never heard it before. Then we talk about it. From Truman to Trump, we cover all your favorite presidents. And not so favorite ones. You can also hear Harmon sounding off about current events and the state of America today. And, if you're lucky, you might be able to catch us reading customer reviews of Trump products on Amazon. You can subscribe to This is the President on iTunes, Google Play, Last.fm, Stitcher, or wherever you find your favorite podcasts. Just search for This is the President, subscribe, and together we'll make America great again.